Hello and welcome to the Astana International Financial Center's Legal Tech Podcast with your host, Mark Beer.
Well, it gives me enormous pleasure today to be talking to Sally Gaya, who is the global CEO of World Commerce and Contracting, amongst many, many other things. Sally is an inspiration for the work she does all around the world, looking at the ways the business might be improved to be more efficient, and particularly around the way in which businesses interact with each other. Sally, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I love the conversations that we have together, so looking forward to the next however long we've got.
So let's start with you, and let's start with World Commerce and Contracting. Tell us a little bit about you and the organisation.
Well, absolutely. So, my background is I trained as a lawyer originally, but I have to say it was in my classroom at law school in Store Street in London where I suddenly had this sort of light bulb moment of, do you know what, this is not the career for me after all, having thought that I was going to be a lawyer since I was a little girl. I headed off into the wilderness somewhat, Mark. I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with myself because, as I said, I really thought this was my future. And I stumbled into the world of contract and commercial management and started my corporate career in IT and telecoms and carried on in that space for quite some time. And found myself, because of my legal background, supporting teams and working on contract negotiations and contract management as a discipline within organizations. And I absolutely loved it. And obviously, I had no idea that this was a thing when I was at school. You know, it was, what are you going to be, an accountant, a lawyer, a nurse, or a teacher? You know, so I was thrilled that I went off into the wilderness as I did and then stumbled on actually putting into practice elements of my legal training that I absolutely loved, but in a very business and commercial environment. So my role at World Commerce and Contracting, that started, I was a member of the association because of the work that I was doing. And I got more and more involved and suddenly had the opportunity to spend more time working with Tim Cummins, the president and founder of the association. And realized that actually there was so much that I wanted to do in the bigger picture environment. I'd reached, I think, a point in time in my career where I'd had enough of negotiating individual contracts. And actually, I relished the opportunity to start working for the association and really focus on the big picture, support the research activity and so on. And I've never looked back. I love what I do. I'm very passionate about the work of the association. You know, we are now an association of over 75,000 members around the world, all working in contracting. But what I love about the association is its diversity. We have a membership, which is not a traditional professional membership. It is a membership that consists of lawyers, procurement contract managers, commercial managers, project managers, the list goes on. Anybody, and this is, you know, the recognition of the nature of contracting, the holistic nature of contracting, the extensive nature of contracting, and the number of different actors in any organization, if you like, that touch the contracting process. So, you know, I've learned so much in my time at the association, and we continue to focus on our vision, a vision of a world where all trading relationships deliver both social and economic benefit.
Fantastic. Social, economic benefit for all. And what a dream, because when most people think of contracts, they just think of having to pour money into lawyers' pockets, or perhaps even worse, go on the internet, pull something off and hope for the very best. Because the contracting process has been one that perhaps in the past has served us well, but nowadays there might be different ways, perhaps better ways. And I've always wondered, Sally, on the sort of paper-based contracting side, are there areas that we're missing? Is there information that we ought to be capturing to make the contracting process more efficient that we haven't been able to with paper contracts that perhaps we might be able to in the future?
Yeah, it's a fabulous question, and one which we are wrestling with a lot at the moment at World CC, Mark. And I think that, you know, yes, let's think about traditional contracts. I mean, contracts have always been intelligent documents, if you like, and they contain a great deal of information, and yet that information typically, in when these contracts are in their paper form, is fairly unusable. And I think, you know, we think about it, the way we've used contracts as well has, you know, and I'm not sure, sort of, you can argue which came first, but of course, you know, contracts have long been considered these instruments of control and risk management. They only come out of the drawer when something goes wrong. They only become live when there's an issue that needs to be dealt with, and oh my goodness, we need to refer to the contract now. Actually, the pandemic taught us that that's still very much the case. You know, the output of the pandemic is that contracts are frankly fairly vacuous, and the organizations that we work closely with across our membership relied on the relationship. It was the relationship that mattered. The contract stayed in the proverbial drawer. It didn't come out. And yet we also saw that those organizations that have started to recognize the importance of contract and the contract and the contracting process as critical sources of business data, they started and they were able to respond to the crisis that the pandemic hit us all with very, very quickly, much more quickly than those who were scrabbling around looking through lever arch files and wondering where the force majeure clause was and what we needed to do. You know, in that context, you know, the furore around force majeure quickly disappeared. It was a flurry of about a week and a half, and then everybody suddenly realized, well, actually, no, that's not what we need to do. We need to go somewhere else. So, you know, I think there's been a real awakening. We've always known this, but the pandemic has taught us a lot of things. And one of the things that it has taught us is that we have to start viewing contracts and the process as these critical sources of business data. And somehow we have to ensure that we extract that data. You know, we've recently written a report where, you know, we've sort of coined this analogy of the sponge and the golden goose. And what do I mean? Well, I mean, you know, this contracts absorb and have historically absorbed intelligence, and that's all they've ever done. You know, in the pre-award phase and the post-award phase, they just continue to absorb intelligence. But you know, what we want to shift to is away from that sponge and to the golden goose. That contracts as a golden goose, they release intelligence to the business. But again, of course, that is not possible without technology. But the exciting thing is that technology is really starting to be a game changer now. And certainly our recent benchmarking report, Mark, showed that, you know, there's been a huge uptick in the implementation of technology in the contracting space. It's somewhat successful, but, you know, I think, and where perhaps I'll end this little monologue, is that we need to really start being brave and courageous about thinking about contracts differently. I think we have become wedded to paper and ink. We can't think about it any differently. And actually, it's going to be really important as we shift to a new world. It's going to be really important for us to consider how we transition from today, where contracts and the process are very undefined and don't deliver that data to an environment where they become that critical source of data for frankly for the survival of many businesses.
And I think we are seeing considerable amounts of investment now into contract management technology. And so one can start to see that organizations are looking at contract management as a technical solution. But I suppose often people talk about, when I talk about courts, they say, oh, we should invest more money in the courts. And I always say, but courts only serve 5% of the population. Only 5% of people with a serious legal issue actually go to court. So should we be focusing on improving the 5% or looking at how we can serve the 95%? And I wonder from what you're saying, as we transition from a classical contracting model into a contracting model that's data-led, is investment in classical contract management really the right place to invest? Or do you see perhaps contracts or relationships or business taking on a totally different form in the future?
Yeah, I think that's a very, very interesting question. And of course, I mean, you know, I think, Mark, the answer to your question is blindingly obvious, isn't it, really? 5% versus 95%. And, you know, we actually need to be focusing on creating an environment where contracts are not this thing that gets pulled out of a drawer when everything goes wrong, but actually they're used to drive successful outcomes. That, you know, the point is we don't want to end up in the courts. I mean, I often, you know, use that little phrase that we typically contract for the divorce, not for the marriage. Our focus is all on, we have to protect ourselves when everything goes wrong, for, you know, almost as an inevitability, as opposed to how are we going to ensure that we are providing the scaffolding, that the contract is this scaffolding for an effective relationship, for the relationship that we want. What relationship do we want? So, you know, I think there's huge amounts that we need to think in that context. And in terms of investment, yeah, you know, we need to be investing in that 95%. But I think we also need to be very, I keep saying brave and courageous, but you know, I think we need to be thinking more about actually what does contracting of the future look like and where do we need to make that investment. And you know, Mark, I mentioned to you one of my favorite academics is Professor Oliver Goodenough over in the US, and he wrote this wonderful paper, and I'm going to share a little bit of the sort of the concept of that paper with you today. But you know, the title of his paper was "Asking About the Contract of the Future Is the Wrong Question," and the paper goes on to talk about the fact that, you know, really, it's a bit like someone in 1820 asking about the future of the horse. And of course, you know, the real question in 1820 was, what is the future of personal transportation devices? And the answer absolutely wasn't a horse at all. And what's interesting, you know, he elaborates that over the 19th century, some folks did try and use the insights and power of engineering to try and replicate the horse. And this was arguably ingenious. Maybe it made some improvements on the flesh and blood version, but actually it wasn't the means for constructing anywhere near the best solution possible with the new technology that was available. And, you know, given the possibility of mechanization substituting for raw animal muscle power, the answer, at least for, and probably still for the next couple of hundred years, would be trains and cars and cycles. And as we know, the future of transportation devices will continue to evolve. But I think that is a really interesting challenge for us all working in this environment, that actually, you know, we need to think more broadly about contracting of the future. We can avail ourselves now of some incredible technology, whether it be artificial intelligence, natural language processing, blockchain platforms, and there's so much that we can do. So, you know, Professor Goodenough, and this is perhaps a controversial opinion, but you know, his view is that contracts are not a thing, rather they're a technique. I mean, we all think about contracts as a thing, whether it's a, you know, paper and a LibreArch file, or whether it's a PDF document, it's a thing. But when he talks about the contract as a technique, you know, he references, okay, well, what do we need? What is it? So we use the recording power of paper and ink. We use the coercive power of legal recognition and enforcement to specify a course of behavior and delivery between two or more parties, and to provide a structure of carrots and sticks that make the occurrence of that course of behavior a reasonably reliable expectation. And I think, so he looks at a contract as a combination of specification and expectation. And he terms it a COSE, COSE. So, well, if we think about contracts as a combination of specification and expectation, if we think about the fact that actually this is just about data, this is just about sharing data within internal organizations, across organizational boundaries, then actually we can think really differently. We can think about how blockchain can help us to perform that technique more effectively. As I say, I think it's a brave call for us to, and it's a shift that, you know, I sort of wish had, Professor Goodenough wrote this back in 2019, and, you know, I know we're only in 2021, but I'm still frustrated by, you know, the pace of change, because I think for my part, this all makes so much sense. But, you know, I think the future is really hard to predict, and certainly I feel, you know, we've come a long way, but we're still in the early days. I mean, when you consider that we still use paper and ink for contracting, we used to do that thousands of years ago as well. So, you know, we've still got a long way to come, but I think that 2 or 3 decades from now, we are going to see a huge shift, and, you know, not only from what they are, but, you know, how we conceive contracts generally, and, you know, our jobs as, whether we're scholars, practitioners, you know, lawyers, business users of contracts, actually what we need to do is focus on usability. And as you know, that's something that I care incredibly passionately about, that we have to design contracts for users. They have to be accessible. They have to be fair. They have to be transparent. And I believe that we can create that environment using the technology that's available to us today.
And the interesting about technology, isn't it, that on the one hand, we've got ever more technology, which is enabling the experience, the user experience, to be better and better, to collect data, yet so much of the world is still wedded to the classical model. And I often think, when we look at technology that people are investing in for contract management, is it a bit like, you know, investing in the saddle factory in 1850? Partly I think that it is, because the blockchain and smart contracting seems to me to be, for three reasons, likely to be, as you say, the way forward. And from my point of view, the three reasons are: one, lawyers seem to be getting more expensive. At least that's what I'm being told by general counsel around the world. And the second thing is the cost of monitoring classical contracts. That's actually having somebody keep an eye on them to make sure that people are honouring them. That seems to be going up more and more around the world. But perhaps more importantly than those two is that as the world is nationalising, or as you know, people say it's deglobalizing, but as there is a little bit more focus on the national, international enforcement of contracts seems to be getting ever harder, because if one party wants to enforce their rights, you know, they go off to the court or arbitration center that the contract provides for. And then if they need to take that piece of paper that they get from the court or arbitration center to another country, it's getting harder and harder to convert that piece of paper to cash. And I wonder, Sally, is that something that a smart environment, a smart contract environment, would help us to solve? Do you see that being an accelerator for digitization and smart contracting, as well as the ability to access data in a better way? Or do you see other drivers?
Yeah, that's really interesting, Mark. I think one of the things we know, again, from the work we do with our member organisations is that contract-related data typically sits on around 24 different systems in any organisation. So, and that's a, you know, bit of a typical finger in the air, but that's an average number, and in some it'll be less and others much more. And the challenge we have in that context is, you know, do we then invest in another system, another piece of technology, a contract lifecycle management system to add, you know, make that number 25? You know, what are we really trying to achieve here? What are we doing? And actually, you know, we're obviously, as an association, we're big proponents of the use of technology, and we're big proponents of streamlining and the impact that technology can have. But I think we need to be a lot smarter about the nature of those technology implementations and what we are really trying to achieve here. If we've already got a whole bunch of systems, we're not going to take them out. That's just not practical. Actually, what we can do, though, and what we've seen happen successfully, and in fact, there's a fabulous case study in the US government where you apply a platform overlay on top of all of those systems that does the job of extracting all of that data, because it's all there. It's all in different silos, but pulling it all together is then exactly what you need in order to drive that, you know, the analytics and the data that you want. And then importantly, it's about creating an environment. And this is an interesting challenge, Mark, in the context of what you're talking about as well, is finding the courage to for that data to be shared across organizational boundaries. And I think that, again, what I'm seeing is actually perhaps a shift away from that need, because we're starting to see the emergence of platform technology where actually the technology goes to the data rather than the data having to come to the technology. So all of the data can stay exactly where it needs to stay. There's no compromise around, you know, privacy, confidentiality issues of crossing those organizational or geographic boundaries. Because you can take the technology to the data, you can analyze the data and bring it all back together again. Now, you know, why is all this important in the context of what you're saying? Well, I think it is, you know, as we transact in this multifaceted way, if you like, and across all of these boundaries, yeah, we're going to need to make sure that data sharing is at the heart of what we do, because that is what's going to help us. Frankly, that's one of the many things that will help us resolve disputes and stay out of the courts, because you're not going to refute the nature of the data, particularly when it's data that's come from your own systems. So, you know, really starting to create that environment where you're driving transparency, but respecting commercial confidentiality as well. And that's a whole nother conversation for another day in terms of, you know, how that snowballed over 20, 30, 40 years, and unnecessarily so. But I do think that provides, you know, that technology provides this really fantastic opportunity for us to create a much more ostensibly open environment where issues get dealt with, friction points are identified, and disputes are resolved through fact, through the data that we're able to use. That and ultimately that is going to support those better functioning relationships.
And I think one of the advantages of a smart contract environment is also that the contract does most of the work. I mean, it's sort of set off at the beginning, and it's, you tell it what the parameters are, and it to some extent, it works it out for itself. And as you say, you know, over time, when you add natural language processing and less Boolean approach to, you know, if then, then, you know, if this, then that, and it moves into a more AI driven contract, which is looking at, as you say, all of the data around the negotiation, the documentation around the contract. At the beginning, were there discussions on a particular topic? All of those areas that normally lawyers pore over after the dispute has already arisen. And if the contract itself can do all of that, then your monitoring costs for contracts decline, and also the need to, you know, to formally enforce contracts goes away, because the contract to a large extent does it itself. So I suppose my final question to you, Sally, is, are smart contracts and the blockchain the automobiles to the classical contracting horse?
I think they are. I think they could be. And I, you know, I think this is really exciting as well. I think this is a really exciting moment for us in the context of contracting. I'm such a geek, aren't I? But I absolutely, I'm so enthused about what is possible in this context. And we can change our views of contracts. I mean, I think one of the big issues is that, you know, when you say the word contract, that conjures up thoughts, words in everybody's minds, and it's mostly legal, everything's gone wrong, it's, you know, it's a bad thing. And, you know, in all I do, and whenever I speak, I'm trying to sort of change that mindset to say, actually, we need to look at these as operational guides. And look at them far more positively. And I think this advent of blockchain and, as you say, self-executing contracts, it means that actually we're putting relevant data into them, and we're focusing in on those right things. I had the most wonderful and hilarious, frankly, quote from a GC of one of the big pharmaceutical companies, and it was just a couple of weeks ago. And he said, "My contracts are a graveyard of past bad experience." And I mean, that quote is absolutely fantastic. A graveyard of past bad experience. And I can visualize that. And we've seen that happen over the years. And, you know, who wouldn't want to move into a different environment and change the way that we perceive contracting, that we view it, that changes its focus and its importance? Contracts are the lifeblood of any organization. And so it is wrong for us to treat them as graveyards of past bad experience. That is failing our organization and our contracting process and the value that can be sought out of contracts and the contracting process. So, you know, to create this shift is, to my mind, incredibly exciting. Very real, very necessary. And yes, Mark, I for one believe that that will be our future.
Well, folks, you heard it here first. The global CEO of World Commerce and Contracting, Sally Geyer. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. As you know, the AIFC Legal Tech Advisory Council brings together thought leaders from around the world to look at the future of legal technology. And today is another example of that. Sally, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
I've loved it. Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
This podcast is being produced by the Astana International Financial Centre and moderated by the chairman of the AIFC Law Tech Advisory Council, Mark Beer. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to hear more information on the Astana International Financial Centre's Law Tech Advisory Council, please follow us on LinkedIn.